that the new version doesn't have.
Drag. This is the title track of his 1967 album that was remastered in 2002 with Bird, the composer, on trumpet, Cedar Walton on piano, Sonny Red on alto sax, Billy Higgins on drums and vocals, and Walt Booker on bass. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And a couple of notes, and then we get into our program proper. A couple of notes. I want you to make an extraordinary effort to resist the subtle and not so subtle hints that we're getting, that we ought to be part of the frenzy and the frantic pace of life in the United States now. You know, all kinds of things are happening, and the Senate is saying one thing, and the House is saying another thing, and it's a calamity every day. It's a new calamity. Remind yourself, this is not your calamity. Although, of course, the fallout, they will orchestrate it and present it. If they're not getting the proper response, they will up the ante to make us all feel paranoid that we're all going to die in the morning. We're not. But you see, this is how we, the people, are used. They are fighting tooth and nail with each other, and there seems to be very little progress, very little resolution, because, of course, they came to the whole process as believing that, hey, we're smart. We're very smart. That's why we're in Congress. That's why we're president. But the fact is that there is a meltdown occurring. That's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing a meltdown. They don't know where to go next. They don't know what to do next. And they know one thing, and that is they can always use us. We, the people, we get used in the fight. And what we have to do is to become very, very connected with ourselves. Understand, this is not our fight. They will make it our fight because we have victory for either side in the balance to manipulate us and to manipulate our thinking and our behavior so that panic sets in and we do things that we didn't intend to do, or some side in this fight decided that we ought to do it now. Just remain as calm as you can, but plan. What are you to plan? You are to plan those things we've been discussing. You are to make plans for your survival very quietly, but very purposefully, to the best of your ability. Put in place things that would help you survive this insanity that is going on in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere. It's also at the state level. It's also at the city level. But this, if you study the history of this kind of fight, this is how it goes. Donald Trump, no matter how much he forecasts how solid he is and how right he is and how victorious he will be, is actually running for cover. His whole administration is upside down. A doesn't know what B is doing. For example, today he held up a puny little thing to illustrate what the new Air Force One would look like. Here's a president like a little kid. He is so excited that the plane is going to be repainted. He is excited about it. So he's showing the country, hey, take a look at my next plane. He's not telling anybody, of course, that it is not he who decides what the plane looks like. There are people who do that. They decide what the color of the president's plane should look like, and for specific reasons, having to do with how visible would the plane be in the air. How visible would the plane be as a target? What color paint is best to use to evade detection? All these kinds of things. He doesn't have a thing to say about it. But there he is this morning, out front of the issue that he does not get to control, that he does not control. So this is the kind of madness that is going on in the United States at the moment, and we, the people, are constantly buffeted by information that is incorrect and by people who have no reason to come to us as if an issue has been resolved, and we believe it. And the news media carry the quote news unquote. Again, this morning was just so upsetting. It has not yet been decided. But the president, needing something to keep him always ahead of the news, always in charge. And by the way, it's a scary thing because by announcing it, he puts the people on edge. Because if he says the plane is going to be blue and here is what it's going to look like, and the military and Secret Service divisions that make these decisions really have agreed that it should be green, well, it makes them look stupid, doesn't it? And this is the kind of game that this president is playing to one up everybody because he is running scared. He's watching the polls. His solid lead is disappearing. And the last thing that he did was to go to Britain and have the British chase him out. So he is aware that he's not the greatest thing since sliced bread, and he's apt to get more nervous and more panicky, and we are likely to see some crazy other things. One other thing that we're seeing already is that in this breach, we have very serious issues that are not sexy, so they don't take precedence or priority. We certainly have the ongoing issue of the I word. Is he to be impeached? And we have all kinds of activity about that. But at the same time that you have activity, you're not getting answers. You're not getting anywhere. Lot of buzz, lot of activity, papers flying everywhere. But there's been no decision on something that should have been clear by now. And we have the leader of the Democratic Party saying, well, it's not a good idea to pursue it. Meanwhile, the members of the party are saying we should pursue it. So, in all of this confusion, they want to drag us into it. And that is one thing we should not do. Stay out of it. Look at what is happening from the outside. But spend our time, our effort, our money, our concentration, whatever it is we have, prepare ourselves to defend our interests. Because it's going to come to a very nasty end very soon. And it is always the case. They would not suffer consequences. We will. So take care to see to your own security needs. Your own survival is at stake. Understand that and don't forget it. Don't get enthralled by their craziness going on in Washington. They all have alternatives. They all have protections. We do not. So the crazier it gets, and it got crazy today, but the president and his little his little diagram showing what the plane is going to look like that hasn't yet gotten the sign off by the people who've been doing this for years. This is what he wants, and this is the way it's going to be. Insane. And now we should all be very happy that he's happy, and he can now take credit for changing the look of the president's plane. Oh, isn't that great? See how mindless this man is, and being very casual about something that is really very serious. It's very, very serious. So remind yourself that the most important thing that you can do now is hunker down and mind your business. See to your survival. Because we have a president and we have been talking about his mental and intellectual and even emotional deficits almost 2 years now. And we have the countervailing view, which is also crazy, because they're scared to do the right thing. Nobody wants to make the right move. But what both sides agree upon is that we are the quarry. We are the people that they will come at with vigor and great speed to use as the toys in this crazy game that they're playing. We are going to get sidetracked. We are going to get sidelined. We are going to get discarded because both sides, and all sides, I should say, they have a way out. They have protections. We don't. So it may sound a bit self-absorbed, but don't worry about that. You deserve to be self-absorbed. We deserve to pay attention to ourselves because it is clear that the apparatus of government is not paying attention to us. Mind your business, put in place some kind of mechanism that could help you maintain your survival. That's number one on your list of things to do. Don't worry about what your friends are saying. Don't worry about people's opinions. This is the number one task at the moment, to see to yourself. And you see, in this period of insanity, you'll have all kinds of things happening. I read today that for blacks, and they're targeting particular groups very heavily. They've come up with this idea of raising the matter of reparations. And we are supposed to say, oh, good Lord, thank you, thank you. We've waited for this so long. We're being manipulated. They're not nearly ready to discuss this issue of reparations. So what they will be doing right now as I'm talking, they'll get some Hollywood stars. They'll get some big names to appear before panels. They'll make it plain that one side is more pro-black than the other side, and everybody's going to be talking about reparations, and Trump is going to be very, very much involved, and because he has to prove he's not a racist, they'll use this very serious and legitimate issue as a political football, and at the same time try to make us grateful. Don't fall for it. They're not equipped to discuss this. They're not equipped to discuss this. I don't care how many movies they've made. And they are not to be allowed to trivialize this exceedingly important issue. It is only a reminder to us how dispensable things could be, and we could be, when it comes down to the matter of winning, what they will do to relieve you of every working brain cell you have in your head. Make you happy while you're being exploited. So I'm saying this because quite a few things have been happening lately. And we just, we see them as news items. And people may or may not discuss them in great detail. But I'm telling you, interpret these things as signals that they're coming for us. We are on the chopping block. And it would be crazy for us to lose sight of what the real game here is. And to lose sight of our number one imperative, and that is survival. Okay, I said what I wanted to say. We, in presidential elections and the years leading up to them, we see strange things happening, but it's been a while since we saw this level and frequency of strangeness and the depth and width of it. It's a very important election year. There's a lot at stake, and we don't know it. This is the whole thing. We think we know it, but we don't. This administration and its supporters, they have something to prove, and that is that they can reverse what little bit of progress has been made on very important fronts. They are determined to return this country to an absolute white supremacist country. They are determined to do it. And therefore, we are not to treat this time that we are in as some kind of just politics as usual. It's not. So take nothing casually. And you will see when you get snippets from the news, you will see how determined they are. They're moving in linear fashion. They are giving their all to this one objective. They are whitening this country in all these various ways, and they're using so-called legitimate ways of doing it, the law. Okay, I'm not going to tempt myself to go back to what it is I was saying. We have to move on. I wanted to ask you to address a question. And the question is about being American. What exactly does it mean to you? And has that definition or concept for you, has it changed? From what to what? Could you help us understand that? You see, these may sound, and we've been talking about topics that sound esoteric. They're not. They're meant to cause us to think for ourselves. And usually, we don't think these things for ourselves. I mean, we don't sit down one nice, lazy Sunday afternoon, having some ice cream and concentrate on these kinds of questions and finding the answers to them. But what exactly does it mean to you? In what way, if it has changed? In what way has it changed? What has caused a change in this basic question for you. All right? It's a simple question. What does being American mean to you? Now we have two numbers, our regular number, our old faithful number, 888-874-4888. And we have a new number, an added number, 646-922-8391. All right, so that's the task today. What does it mean to you? What does being American mean to you? Has it changed? If so, from what to what? And what do you think, as you look upon the question, what do you think has caused a change in your attitude to the question, in your answer to the question? It is just a question. But perhaps if you help us understand how you're looking at it, it will serve a much larger purpose and get us to a place where we need to go. Chris from Harlem, you're on the air and getting us started today.
Good day, Eutrice. Peace to the family.
Hello. Thank you.
So the question of what does it mean to be American to me? So I'm 45 years old, from Harlem, born and raised, from a family that has our family tree goes before this was called the United States of America here, as an African American. So, as I look at it as being an American, I see it as a birthright. I see it as in the development of this nation, we were integral. The reason why we speak English in a way that is not like Australia or Ireland or the Caribbean, per se, is because of this other influence, which is family, of course, to those in the Caribbean and such. But the very nature and construct of what it is to be American was defined by us. Otherwise, it would just simply be an extension of another European colony. The premier and first art forms, distinctly and created in the United States as distinctly American, came from our folk, excuse me, our folk being Afro Native folk. So, every aspect of what is American to me is in the DNA of what I am, what my children are. As a teenager, so as I said, I'm 45. As a teenager in the 90s, I was of the mindset that I'm not American. I'm not American because America has not done anything for us. So why would I call myself American? As I grew older, as I became a father, it was very clear that that was a ploy and a misdirection in logic, discrediting all of the very nature of what it is to be what is called American, and having the right to be respected as countrymen, especially from new people who come in with a different set of ideologies, and now one or two generations in, specifically from Europe often, because these are most of the talking heads that we see, to tell me what it is to be American. Because they said so, because it's that's the way it is. So my feelings now is that there is no American culture. And I say culture in a big sense, something unifying where one would say that you're my countryman. I would do no harm to you. I would like you to prosper. You may not be from my family, but we are of the we are of the same nation. That feeling of nation, not being afraid of each other, running around and not being able to address or talk about things that address and really matter, generation to generation. I know I've gone on a bit. I could go on a lot more. Are you with me, Utrecht?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Could you think of a particular incident or experience or time when these feelings that you're expressing today emerged not as peripheral or incidental thoughts, but almost central to your being?
You treat the overall, traveling back and forth through the city in and of itself. I am an African-American man with locks that stands up straight and has a hardcore New York uptown. I'll talk directly to you, and if necessary, I will actually tell you about yourself. This is not always a good thing, but I will actually want to reach out and have communication and dialogue with people, just as the day-to-days. It's very difficult for me, even if I have on shades, have on my hat, head down, facing a book, to actually feel comfortable and not on guard because of the various interactions that do not come across positive or any particular way. So it's all, essentially what I'm saying, Utrecht, is that the sense and the feeling in the city is one of that's very unsafe and has me guarded, and the men and women that I speak to from the diaspora that are here are also on guard because there is this tension in the air, and it comes from all aspects. We do it to ourselves. Much of it has to do with, even as a people, we seem to just be most secure and have the most courage when we are in dispute with each other. So I know that's kind of a rigmarole type of answer or feeling, but it's generally,
don't characterize it as such. It is what you are feeling, and therefore, it is to be respected and understood as you sharing an honest, sacred part of yourself, and you are tolerating our barging in on you. Responding this way, and this is very, very important. Do you feel hopeful that the way you are feeling now, do you feel hopeful, if you were to, you know, spread it out a little bit, that it will change, the society will change, and you will feel differently?
So I look at this in terms of generations. Am I hopeful? I feel as though what is necessary, and as you alluded to earlier, but specifically how I interact with it, is that the stronger the family, if you can prepare your family, I'm not just talking monetarily, because money could disappear in a second and we would still need to, and be able to need to be able to have housing or structure or some type of security and ability to grow food and be able to survive going forward. So most important, do I think it's going to change? It's been a long time, many generations before me, asked that same question and said yes, and just look at this book or that book, and you'll see that it will get better, and it has not. I do not believe that all is lost, because if I depend on the system in general to correct itself, it's not going to. If I depend on it to take care of my family, it's not going to. So what I can do is remember, and reintroduce all aspects of family and friends into the very crafts and trades that humanity has used to survive for eons. So family always will outlive nations.
Well, you have given us one heck of a gift here today, Chris, by sharing your deep thoughts about a subject that I'm sure you weren't expecting to be talking about today.
Not at all. Thank you.
But, you know, it may seem sometimes that, you know, I'm taking an oblique angle, but it, really there is a direction that we're heading, and I'm asking us all to move away from our normal way of thinking and doing things and spend some time thinking about our lives this way, in a purposeful way, to find out sometimes, you know, you shock yourself when you start verbalizing for yourself what you are feeling and experiencing, yeah. And you go, oh, wow, that was deep. You know, you don't walk around saying I'm a deep guy, but you know what I mean, that there are times when you surprise yourself about how deep the problem is, and when you connect with it, you are forced to go deeper yourself in order to find answers and to address what you have uncovered.
Yes.
Thank you so much for getting us started today, Chris. I really
appreciate
your call.
Always appreciate it, Yatrice. Be well.
Thank you. Well, you know, we have two numbers, 646-922-8391, and our old standard, 888-874-4888. We're asking these questions today because soon enough they'll become important to all of us, because we will have to activate ourselves to respond to threats to our survival. It's inevitable. You see it happening. You see it coming down the road in full force. So we have to start thinking about these things. How do we prepare? Not react on an emergency basis, but how do we prepare ourselves for what's coming? Where are our strengths? Where are our weaknesses? What exactly is happening to us? Do we know? Do we know? We think of it as politics. Is it simply that? Or is it something else? And as I continue to remind us, we don't have one history. We don't. So everything being interpreted in our particular history, what do you come up with? What do you see happening? Okay, I see nothing happening on our board, and I was so sure that we would have lots and lots of people chiming in, which is the reason for the discussion in the first place. Is it scaring you that we're having these discussions and you would rather talk about something else? Or is it that as you think about it in a purposeful way, you're having trouble finding answers? Either way, it's a good thing because it interrupts a cycle of us doing very little or nothing with regard to our specific need to survive. Everybody else has a plan. Everybody else is going about their business. And this government has brought this issue in so many ways to the fore. I don't know how we can continue to ignore it. What is our plan? Every single person in the Trump administration, they have plans. Well, they call them portfolios, they call them investments and whatnot, but they have plans. And they're prepared. Hello, Clara from Philadelphia. You're on the air.
Hello, excuse me. Hello, Yatrice. I hope
Oh.
you're well today. I've been thinking about this a long time, this topic. It's a part of my ongoing agenda for myself to reconcile myself about the way things are going and the way I see things going and what my role is in protecting myself and my family and also expanding knowledge to other people about what's going on. And I agree with everything you've been saying in recent weeks, all along, really. I think you've moved more in my direction. Anyway, my thoughts are, and this is, goes back several years, it's like a germ that started, began in my mind back, well, I'd say in my life as recently as I would say the 90s, because no, before that. When I lived in California and I used to listen to the Muslim bakery broadcast, there was a man who ran the Muslim bakery in Oakland, and he always announced himself as his name, which I don't recall, Man in America. And that stuck with me, and I thought about what that meant. And over time, that's the way I began to it. I now identify myself. I don't allow other people to tell me what to call myself or to place me somewhere in this configuration by words. And that means to me that I'm here for many reasons beyond my control. And it's a mixed situation. There have been many blessings, but the blessings have been stunted in a way, but by the way things have been, but by the way everything has been created and continued. And the way we came here is always in my mind. Also, on the brighter side, when I think of American culture, I think of nothing original except jazz, our contribution. We have many other contributions that have been obfuscated or just denied. And so I think of that, and then that turns into something positive. We have so much to offer. Why not bring it into our own community? And that's been kind of my venture in terms of talking to people, interacting to pe with people, and looking forward in terms of what my family and I are planning to do in the service of community. So that's basically where I stand as an 85-year-old. I hope I have another 10 years to work on these issues. But it does, the man who spoke just now, the man who spoke just now hit it on the nail. Nothing can supersede family if the family functions as a true family. So I see one more thing I'd say. I think the people who are in charge and those who are egging them on will self-destruct. It's going to take time. I don't know what the outcome of that will be. But in some ways, I think it might be better than where we are now. There will be a resolution, and I think it will be in the favor of the people they are trying to destroy, but not because of us, because of their own behavior. I used to go to a church, it's not really a church, an organization called Science of Mind. And one of the almost important issues or sayings or ways of living that they promoted was that everything, well, we would say what goes around comes around, but they would say life is a boomerang. And it's true in every situation I have seen and considered. I think I've talked a lot, but I don't know if you want to
Yeah,
engage
but it's
or
worth
whether you've
listening
tuned
to.
out.
It's worth listening to, Clara.
You're so worth
Oh.
listening to. I'm going to tell you how much I appreciate you. And I don't go out on a limb like that for people. When I say it, I mean it. You're so important to our lives, you Trace.
Well, thank you for that. How do you think you have evolved with this to the point of clarity about things?
Oh, you're asking a question. How have I evolved?
Yes.
What
do you think was responsible?
Or did you finish the question?
Yes.
Oh, well, my mind has been opened more as an... I think I had to hit middle age to truly open my mind. You see, I was very carefully educated in the ways of this culture, of the myths of this culture. You see, since I opened my mind and my eyes, they get brighter and more open. The latest example of the myths that drive this culture and the lies that drive this culture, I learned a few days ago when I learned what the gulag really was. From the time I was a little girl, after World War II, we were taught about it was in the papers, and I would hear people talking, and I would read about the Russian gulag. And I don't have his name here. Let's see. A man came on one of your programs the other day. His name is... Oh, God, I have his name. Oh, yeah. His name is Faulkner. He wrote a book. No, that's Faulkner, Guns and Butter. I don't have that. His name is James Back. He wrote a book, Other Losses. He wrote Crime and Mercies. But he's written a new book, Hidden History. It's about and backed up by 2 years of research, documented research. The Russian gulag was not the Russian gulag. The person who created and directed it, most people know what it is? I know you do, but the gulag was a venture of death and destruction to the German people after the World War II. They were made to feel totally vicious and inadequate by this campaign. And the ways of the campaign were death and imprisonment. German soldiers who were prisoners of war were put to these torture camps, deep into Russia. Private citizens were killed. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed in this war of crime, this crime of destruction after World War II, involving the Allies, the United States, and Russia. But the director was General Eisenhower. See, that kind of thing. All my life, I was lied to about this one thing. There were many, there were hundreds of other things. But I'm telling you, this is the most recent revelation. So it goes on, and that transforms my thinking and my way of being in this world. And then knowing sources of truth, which many of which come from PRN.
Do you believe that we'll soon have to face down another kind of crisis of survival because of plans that had been made? We're seeing them being played out. We're not being paranoid. We're seeing them being played out. Do you think we are facing, in the not-too-distant future, a challenge to our survival?
Oh, we already are. I can just give you one specific thing. There are thousands. The administration of the MMR on black children, knowing the outcomes, having known since the turn of this century at least, that you know about that, the way the MMR, black boys, now they're saying black children, okay, I knew it was more than boys, black boys have a double, at least a double chance of get of what is the word? Oh God, the kids get. Anyway, having their brains destroyed, I'm thinking the word, if they get that MMR before the age of 36 months, that's been, and they're continuing, and our people are continuing to allow it. I've told so many people, giving them references of the facts. That's just one. We are in the process of exterminating. They want to get rid of us. Okay, that's, I'm going to put it right out there. This is another Holocaust that we're facing, in my opinion. It's already on. So that's the downside, the lack of understanding. I might be considered paranoid, I know I am, by many people, but the people that I talk to who know a lot from their studies, most of which started at PRN. I'm telling you, in terms of opening our minds, I've only known about it for about 5 or 6 years. But I was already reading. And I know that we're in the midst of a potential peril. So I think about those men in prison in Arizona. They have a name for them, the something six. And how they tried to do their best and tried to be, they were seeking the American dream. Instead, they were met with a black nightmare in America. So we have to be very careful, very, 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 not only careful, but very, very thoughtful about what we are doing and where we're going and what we're planning for ourselves. We cannot depend on anybody but ourselves and hopefully our community.
Correct. Thank you, Clara, for your thoughtful contribution today, all as always. You give us much to think about in return. We ask you a question, and you say, well, here's my answer. Now go think about that.
Okay. Thank you, Yatrice.
Thank Bye. You so much. 888-874-4888 as we close in on time, and 646-922-8391. We have just heard from two people, and they already should have your head spinning, because we're talking about things that are not normally discussed, and certainly not normally discussed at this level. And the question was very simple. The question was, what is it that you think we're facing? What are we looking at? What is this intricately choreographed event that we are experiencing in dribs and drabs? We get, you know, a little chunk here and a little chunk here, and we're not linking these things, but they are part of a major event that will soon come. Are we prepared for it? And the lesson from Clara is very clear. How are you to prepare yourself if you don't see the link? And this is what we ought to do. We ought to be talking about these things. You know, we will soon see in this discussion that they're trying to push through right away the issue of reparations. And they'll get all these Hollywood people to tell us about reparations and why this country should basically make some kind of reparations to those people harmed. And those people harmed for generations. All of that is fine. But A, it's not as if we didn't know about reparations. But B, to what extent is this country committed to really talking the truth about reparations. What is the truth of reparations? What is the truth of suffering over time, so much time? How do you quantify that kind of suffering and loss? What is going to be the measure? Who is in charge of determining these things? Very difficult. But what's more difficult is that we ourselves, we are reluctant to claim these realities that have occurred in our lives, maybe not in our time, but before we were even spirits, you know, to be born. And do we understand how so much of what we are experiencing today is linked to all of these experiences of long ago? Does a government have an obligation to make up for its trespasses and its crimes? Who is going to insist on it? How do you quantify it? Do we have a duty still to make that happen? How will we do it? That's the question. And many, many more questions having to do with making ourselves whole, setting the record straight, making things right. And to quote the topics that we've been talking about, the subject, reclaiming and repairing our community. We have to do something. I read a little piece, it was in the newspaper, about Frank Lucas, the great drug lord, dying. And it was written from the point of view that it was almost history. And of course, they noted that only recently was it confirmed that Nicky Barnes also had died after being in the government's informant program, having some surgery to change his face and so forth. But you know what is never said? They presented these drug lords, presented as great characters, interesting, intriguing. They never say that they also are responsible for the epic destruction of Black communities all over America. The deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. We'll get to that another time, but time is out for us. So we'll join each other tomorrow, Free Your Mind Friday. Thanks.